Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com. Today's guest has interviewed hundreds of people, including rock musicians, hotel maintenance staff, architects, credit default swap traders, and radiologists, all in pursuit of learnings for clients who are designing new products, services, and experiences. So it's no wonder that he's written the book Interviewing Users. His name is Steve Portigal, and he's a popular speaker at South by Southwest and other conferences. And his articles about culture, design, and innovation have been published in Interactions magazine and Core 77. I met Steve when I was heading up brand and strategy at Sony Electronics, and he helped us uncover unexpected insights about what was then the emerging category of digital imaging. His work has informed the development of everything from mobile devices to medical information systems to music gear. And so I've asked him to share some of the nuggets of wisdom included in his book, Interviewing Users, How to Uncover Compelling Insights. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks. Great to chat with you here and everybody else.
Steve, let's start off with why interviewing users and market research in general is important. You know, it's widely known that Apple doesn't conduct research, and yet its products and software and stores are some of the most beloved and successful of our generation. So why even bother with user interviews?
The Apple point is such a great one, and you know what happened in 2012 with the lawsuits with Samsung, and there were some document disclosures, and there actually was a report of a focus group that surfaced. So took that myth. I mean, of all the things they kind of got out of that, but that myth, that idea that Apple doesn't do research, I think is so, that itself was kind of compelling. But I remember knowing people at, when Apple had that ATG, their advanced technology group, in the 90s, they were doing these projects where they were sending people, social scientists, to Africa and looking at how people were using technology. I mean, it's exactly that kind of research that a lot of my colleagues and I are involved in. But it doesn't really fit sort of the platonic ideal of Apple. So whether it's accurate or not, I think that story is out there. It's a thing that comes up in meetings. It comes up when people talk about how to innovate. And, you know, people go back to this powerful story about, well, this is what Apple does. And, yeah, okay, whether they do it or not, I think that idea, that, you know, that sort of beacon out there of how Apple works is so interesting because, you know, I have to look back at any other company and say, well, are you Apple? Can you do what Apple does? Can you take a vision and so tightly control it from, you know, inception to execution to launch? I mean, no one else can do that. That's baked into their culture, and there are, you know, business books and all sorts of things that try to capture that magic and help somebody else do it. But, you know, we keep looking at the market of anything, and Apple is just so unique in that way. So, yeah, if you can do what Apple does, or this mythical version of what Apple does, great, go for it. Don't do market research. Be geniuses. Have, you know, incredible vision and produce great products. But I think this is a rare ability, an extremely rare ability. I mean, as far as why insights about customers or why interview people, you know, that's not the only way to be innovative, to develop things. I think it's one, you know, and there are, you know, technology inventions, and there's being lucky, and there's being fast followers, and there's so many different ways to go about it. You know, I mean, and having insights about customers, doing market research, learning something new about the world or finding needs is not sufficient. You know, I work with so many companies where we find incredible things and we talk about what could be done from that. And I think organizationally, I see a lot of challenges for them that, you know, to act on that, to pursue those ideas, you know, comes a lot of risk with that. And some of those do do get pursued, and then it takes years and years and years. And, you know, you mentioned the work we did together when we first met. I mean, as we've watched that category over the many years in between that time and now, you know, you keep seeing products come out that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't right. It wasn't right for Sony. It was too early, or it was too risky. I mean, I don't have a judgment on what did or didn't happen at that time, but you know, those insights pointed their way to things, and other people eventually seized upon them when the situation changed. So, you know, it's part of market research, talking to customers is part of a whole bunch of things that companies have to do to innovate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, when we worked together, we employed a specific type of research that some people refer to as ethnographic research. And so I was hoping that you could explain what ethnographic research is and how it differs from maybe more traditional research methods.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, I didn't use the word ethnography in very much in the book. Sometimes when I give talks, you know, I will avoid the word or I'll call it the E word because it's a hot button term. I think it's really fascinating. Sometimes people who call themselves ethnographers would say that you can only be doing ethnographic research if you are an ethnographic researcher, and that's not a methodology categorization, that's an academic background. And I think that's a distracting conversation from what I want to talk about. So that's just, you know, my disclaimer about the term here. But whatever we want to call it, this type of research is, typically it's small samples. If I had to, you know, put a number on it, it's numbers like 8 people or 24 people. The research takes place in context. And context is in people's homes, in their cars, in their offices, in their factories, wherever it is that the thing that you want to meet and learn about is happening. So there's some observation, some immersion that happens for you as the interviewer. But the kinds of things that get discussed in the interview, you can have a plan, but there's always going to be things that come up that, you know, you're open-ended in your questioning, but also in your topic. So things that you didn't know you were going to ask about, you end up asking about. That's the benefit of it. You don't know what you don't know, and so this is kind of a way to go at it. The conversation itself is kind of a balance to that end. It's kind of a balance between what you think you want to know when you go out there and what emerges. And you know, I think about whatever that line Michelangelo had about the sculpture being in the marble and it's kind of the artist's job to draw it out. Mm-hmm. I think that about this kind of interviewing, that person has a story to tell us and it's sort of our job to create the space for that story to emerge as opposed to kind of going through a checklist of questions and getting, uh-huh, yes, no, got it, yes, 3, 5, 27. So the way that we're talking to people is a really engaged form of listening. The great interviews for me are the ones, and I can rarely do this, but the ones where you are only asking follow-up questions, where the conversation kind of goes based on what has happened before. So what you're doing as an interview in this is building rapport. And rapport is what makes these interviews just feel really great to everybody. So the opening up is really about this connection that you establish, and you hear things that you wouldn't have thought to ask, like I said, and that you maybe aren't prepared to even explicitly ask, but they kind of emerge organically.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of a lot from ourselves. We have to really let go of what we think the world is like for this person, and kind of be open to hearing things in a fresh way, and also our own judgments. So the world is different than my world, and if I have reactions to people's lifestyle choices or how they raise their kids or what their house looks like or what they don't know about a product that I'm invested in. It's not that I don't have those reactions, but I learn have to set them aside and just be really open to kind of embracing and engaging with them on their level. And this is just about tapping into what's important to people. That I really wouldn't know that until I kind of went about it this way. So there's kind of a philosophical approach, I think, that it's about this lack of constraints. And then there's just some operational things about being in context, being really deeply engaged, and you know, having these kind of small samples that are carefully chosen to meet your criteria.
Okay. And it strikes me that there's obviously the skill involved in the interviewing process, as you've just kind of described, but then there's also the skill in what you do with what you heard. This is probably a huge topic that we could talk about forever, but can you briefly describe how you translate learnings from interviews into strategic implications that help businesses achieve their goals or achieve new growth or address challenges? Maybe give an example or something?
Okay, yeah. A few years ago, we did a project for a company that's big into computer accessories and iPod accessories. In fact, so this a few years ago, this was the summer that the iPhone came out. So if we did this project a year later, it would be different. We were talking iPod, not iPhone. That was kind of the dominant digital accessory that people were very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And they had already done a big quantitative study about where do people listen to music on portable devices. So they had this list, in-home, out-of-home, exercising, out-of-home, not exercising, commuting, at work, at school, in the gym, all these kinds of things. They had them ranked. And they knew that there were these different behaviors. And their frame on the problem was, let's understand the pain points that people have. Like, what's the problem that people have? And if we can figure out what that is, just like joggers had a very specific armband solution for their iPods,
mm-hmm.
These guys felt like, oh, we could create something specific to each of these environments. They have their own unique challenges, and if we can understand that. So that was kind of the brief we were given. We
mm-hmm.
found people that were doing each of these things. Before we interviewed them, we had them do all sorts of self-documentation and take pictures of their stuff and their accessories and kind of how they put themselves together and what their aspirations were. We kind of really opened it wide up. And then we went out with them and we did these activities. And so we drove cars and jogged on the beach and walked dogs and hung out in the office. We kind of did these activities and interviewed them about the activities and also about how music listening and their accessories or lack thereof kind of played into it. And I remember this one interview, we talked to a student. We met him in his home, and we had him recreate his coming home process. So he kind of packed up his backpack and everything, and he walked outside only to turn around and come back in just to demonstrate for us. And I wasn't even leading the interview. I was sort of sitting back, and I could see him come up to the front door. And he came up to the front door, and he had his earbuds in. As he came up to the door, he took both earbuds out and then came in and then kind of went about unpacking. And, eventually I was able to ask him, why did you do that? And he said, well, I didn't want to be rude. And I didn't really understand what he meant. He said, well, I'm coming home. My roommates might be there in my recreation for you, and I don't want to be rude.
Hmm.
I said, well, could you just turn the volume down? Like, what's the difference here? He says, no, I don't want them to see me with my earbuds in because that says I'm not available to them. And hindsight's 20/20. I don't know how the story reads when you hear it, but what I remember was it was a small aha, and as we went through the rest of the project, we realized we were hearing these kinds of things from everybody, that the way that they kind of looked to the world and what they said about the world was different than functionally being able to hear. There was a kind of a social performance of wearing the device that was really kind of complicated. Even though the problem is framed was about what are the challenges people are having within each of these kind of usage contexts, the more interesting challenge for people was as they moved between them.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm with my friends and I want to listen to music and I want to be social but I want to be private, if I want to talk to a shopkeeper but I want to have music on, people felt like they had to constantly navigate between kind of in the music space and out of the music space. And the only way they really had to do this was to have one in and one out. You see kind of kids doing that a lot. And
mm-hmm.
it was kind of their compromised behavior, which ruins audio quality and is sort of, it's not very safe in terms of having these dangling cords. And so it was interesting. We learned things about the problem as framed for us, but we also identified this new thing that was very hard to solve and, had, I think, a lot of potential for innovating. So they ended up with this new opportunity. It was different than what they started out with. And then, you know, process-wise, like you said, this we could talk a lot about this, but we boiled a lot of these insights down to some key questions, kind of generative questions. We did a two-day offsite with a whole bunch of disciplines in the organization, and we spent these 2 days sort of answering the questions with concepts, products, services, software, things that this company didn't typically do, so that they walked away with a whole range of things that they could do for new categories of products, new positionings, new lines of business. And, you know, what happens was that, you know, the initial question, you couldn't really move the needle by designing for dog walking, but you could design for this other piece and really change how things are done by people. Now, we know that we don't really have a solution out there, so, I mean, that tells you about the challenges the organization faced. I think they felt like, you know, they were not Apple, right? They're not at a point where they can kind of do anything and choose to do anything. So they didn't seize the opportunity the way as the vendor I saw it, but I think it found its way in sort of smaller, more subtle fashion into, you know, a lot of their design activities. So I think it's the challenge of a lot of these stories is you want, you know, we did this, we learned this, and then boom, a new, you know, magic, you know, carpet kind of came out of it. And often, you know, anybody that works in organizations knows, you know, the next steps, the consequences are blunted and diffused and sort of challenged by just, you know, everyday organizational things. So
sure.
I think this was valuable, and it gave them the opportunity, and then they were able to make an educated choice about where to go with their categories.
Right. That is so fascinating. Steve, you are such an expert on this topic. I really want to encourage my listeners to check out your book. Again, it's called Interviewing Users, How to Uncover Compelling Insights. And so for my listeners, you can find it on the Rosenfeld Media website at rosenfeldmedia.com/books/interviewing-users. And you want to be sure to use discount code PORTAGLE2013 to get 20% off the book. And also, thanks to Steve's and Rosenfeld's generosity, I'm able to give away 3 free copies of the printed book. So you'll want to be one of the first of the 3 folks to tweet about this interview using the hashtag DeniseGiveaway and tell us what you learned from Steve about interviewing users. Again, the hashtag DeniseGiveaway. What did you learn from Steve? Steve, thank you so much for all this great insight about interviewing users.
Thanks. Great to talk with you.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.